Conversation with Dean on City Talk 105.9.
And today I'm in conversation with Kelly Hand, who recently opened her own gallery here in Liverpool City Centre. Good afternoon, Kelly.
Good afternoon.
I was there on, it was July the 4th.
It was a great turnout. It was a fantastic turnout, yeah. I was delighted, actually. We had over 350 people there, so really great to see so many familiar faces, but lots of new people that I hadn't met before, so it's fabulous.
Excellent. And now just tell us where your gallery is, because it's not sort of in the run-of-the-mill place, as if I can put it that way.
No, it's Cotton Street, which is just off the Dock Road. So if you carry on past the Liver Building, heading out towards Stanley Docks, slightly unusual, but I think that helps us in terms of the amount of space that we can provide artists.
Because it is a large gallery, isn't it?
It is, yeah, deliberately. And we wanted something where artists can grow with the gallery, which means that they can do their first solo show with us, say, in 2008. But because of the size of the gallery, then, if their work develops, they'll be able to come back and do work in the next couple of years, rather than having something small right smack bang in the city centre, where we'd have to move in a couple of years. So we're here for the long term.
And what did it used to be? Was it a warehouse or something like that?
It was a big old derelict warehouse. And I'm very lucky to have met a very kind landlord who had the vision, really, to support me in turning it into a gallery.
How did you find him, then?
Well, interestingly, I worked with his wife's sister at FACT when I was at FACT, and she said, oh, you must meet my sister, she's really interested in the arts. So we set up a meeting. They invited me around for dinner, and whilst I was there, her husband was listening to my plans to, because it's Liverpool's first contemporary commercial art gallery, and there's nothing like it between here and Glasgow. And he was struck by the passion I had, I think, for the arts, but also he was kind of inspired about the possibility of opening up the city, and actually perhaps a building that he thought would make perfect gallery.
Now, it seems, because as I said, I went to the opening and enjoyed it very much, but it seems an odd choice to make, because it does seem to be. Have you had a tip off that this is the next area of Liverpool to be developed? Because it is quite quiet down there, isn't it?
Well, amazingly, during the day, it's absolutely heaving with kind of business. It's a thrive of business activity. And in my street alone, there's an aerial theatre company. In fact, they did a lot of the work on the Capital of Culture launch, you know, on the outside of the building. There's a jewellery designer, there's some artists, there's a music studio, you know, so it's one of those areas that's very organically kind of grown, but actually also I think in the next year or so that whole area is going to be completely transformed. And in many ways, because of the listed nature of a lot of those old warehouse buildings and the fact that it's the docks kind of area, it means that they can't be flattened and turned into like luxury apartments, you know, but they have to be used creatively.
And I think there are great plans for that area anyway, aren't
there?
The whole development of that Docklands.
Absolutely. It's very exciting.
So you're in at the right time.
I am. Let's hope so.
So what, you know, obviously you come from an arts background, and we'll come on to that, but it's a big decision, isn't it? And a big step to take to say, well, I'm going to have my own gallery and go on my own, as it were.
It is. And actually, it's probably the most terrifying thing I've ever done. But
is it something that you've always wanted to do? Or?
Do you know, I really... the kind of model that I've developed, I think, yes, it's been there since I trained as an artist myself. And so going back to my early 20s, I think the kind of places that I used to go into on travels, you know, go to New York or go to other cities, and you'd go into these kind of spaces, and the kind of people that they attract, and the kind of exciting things that happen. And it might seem an unusual thing, you know, some of these spaces, but some of the most exciting things in kind of art history have happened in just such spaces. So yes, it's been a dream of mine for a long time.
Do you have any favourite galleries around the world?
One of my favourites is in Ireland, and it's called the Douglas Hyde Gallery, and actually they just have an amazing programme. But there's a mixture of public galleries and commercial galleries. I think the thing about commercial galleries is that actually they can pop up wherever, you know, actually, because they're always trying to find kind of cheap spaces and what have you. So there's the Gosh, the kitchen gallery. There's, you put me on the spot now. It'll come to me. There's so many.
They're not the usual ones, though. I was maybe expecting you to say the Guggenheim or someone like that.
Well, actually, the Bilbao Guggenheim. Now, there's a building. Mm. I wouldn't like to curate that, though. It's quite a tricky space, but the building's amazing.
You're talking about curating there. Tell us about this first show, then, your opening show at the gallery. How have you brought all that together?
Well, the opening show is called These Living Walls of Jet, and it was taken from a poem by John Donne, which is called The Flea. And John Donne was kind of one of the Baroque poets, or metaphysical poets, if you like. And he really, in this poem, he's talking about kind of nature. He's actually trying to seduce a lady. And he's talking to, there was an idea at the time about a flea bite. When it bites one person and bites another, the bloods mingle. And that's referring to kind of a marriage, if you like. And I was really interested in this kind of theme at the moment that a lot of artists are kind of picking up, which is the natural world, if you like, or the kind of the nature or the beast within even, and this idea that that somehow disrupts the real or disrupts the everyday. So it was something that I'd noticed as a kind of general trend in lots of artists' works, and it was something that I thought might be interesting. But also there's a huge return to craft, and I don't necessarily just craft in terms of ceramics but in terms of really developing kind of process-based, skill-based kind of work. So painting and sculpture and personally, I think it's a response to kind of the rise of technology. And it's interesting for me because I've come from kind of the last 5 years I've been dedicated to film and video, working at FACT. And so I guess I was also quite interested for myself to do a show that was working with artists who were working in this way, but also where the making of stuff was really central to what they do. So, but I also wanted to find an opportunity to introduce the kind of curatorial concept of the gallery, the fact that we will be curating shows. They're all free to the public.
Now, what do you mean by that, just in case anybody is not clear?
Instead of just picking a load of people we like and shoving it on the walls, that we actually think about the reasons behind what artists make and why they make it. So we kind of noticed, like with these Living Walls of Jet, we were kind of interested in suggesting also that the idea of a gallery is not a dead, empty architectural space. You know, it's a living space, and it's just one little publishing moment. So it's one opportunity to capture some ideas and to show people, and this is just one thing that these artists do. So for us, these living walls, if you like, was also to say that whatever you put in a space, the space itself, the context, has a part to play in creating meaning. So we wanted in the first show to just to show that obviously this is going to be a space where people can come and be active within it, and that we want to exchange ideas and have conversations with people about art. You might not like everything you see each time you come to the gallery, but that's okay, because I want to have that discussion with people.
You're listening to City Talk 105.9 with me, Dean Sullivan, on The Sullivan Show. I'm in conversation with my special guest this hour, Kerry Hand. We're talking about Kerry's brand new gallery that just recently opened in Liverpool. How many artists have you brought together then for this first show, Kerry?
There's 11 artists, although two of those artists work as a collaborative, and that's Persijn Broersen and Margit Lukacs, who are from Amsterdam. And they've made an amazing wall drawing that covers the whole wall of my office, if you like, and they've created this amazing arabesque structure, which is something that's been in kind of contemporary history, where they're talking about faith and kind of belief systems, but also it's an ornamental structure that's referred to mean kind of the end, a never-ending cycle of life, if you like. So they've created something specially for the gallery, which also looks like a natural form, but combined with kind of almost like dinosaurs' bones. You know, it's something that's living, but has got this, it's kind of teetering on the decay side of things as well. So it's got, again, that natural force is kind of creeping in to kind of disrupt things a little bit, which is a perfect kind of setting for the whole show, I think.
How difficult or otherwise is it to bring together different artists and different styles and different techniques or whatever in order to create a show? Are you trying to see a link between each artist's work?
Yes, you do. I think, so in the show we have photography, painting, sculpture, drawing, printmaking, and with each of those artists' works, they're really interested in a kind of mythology as well. So kind of princes, queens, kind of celebrity, this idea of the kind of the mask, if you like, or a different character lurking beneath. So that's something that's also coming through a lot of the artist's work. But this kind of Baroque sensibility and this kind of luscious, kind of quite dramatic and but quite dark, very seductive, is kind of running throughout the artist's work. So I guess because I've been doing it for a long time, over 20 years, you start getting a sense of kind of connections between artists' work. Sometimes they make those connections themselves, and sometimes, you know, they're intrigued that you've kind of put them in a show together. It's this particular show, I wanted to work with people that I hadn't worked with before. So that's always a little bit scary for both of us, both the artist and yourself.
But did you know them all anyway?
No.
Did you know their work? No.
I knew some of them. So it was a lot of research and then kind of starting conversations, seeing what they might be interested in. But actually, a lot of the artists, some of the work I already knew that I wanted to include in the show, and then some of them made new work specially for the show. So some of those links are very subtle, but actually I think they were all really pleased to be in the show with each other, because actually a couple of them had been in touch with each other via Facebook and various other, because they'd been admiring each other's work. So they had made some of those connections.
And do artists approach you as well and say,
yes,
you know, here's my portfolio, would you be interested in showing you?
Yes, and I'm actually really happy to say that at our gallery, we're really always happy to hear from artists. So we're really interested in having a discussion, people sending in emails, and if we can't help or it's not the kind of work we're interested in, we might know somebody else who is or does. So yes, artists are at the centre of everything we do.
Now, you know, we keep hearing about the credit crunch and, you know, tightening our belts and, you know, everything going up. So what is the world of art galleries like? Are you worried that people might not be digging into their pockets to spend on art?
To be honest, no. I think if I was dealing in Warhols or Andy Warhols or, you know, even Damien Hirst's, maybe, although I don't think Damien's got anything to worry about. I think what I tried to do in this opening show was to have work on sale from between £100 through to £15,000, and that was
which one was £15,000? I'd be interested because I didn't see the price list. I'd be intrigued to know.
It was the there's a deer, a kind of Bambi sculpture,
yes,
made from wax and resin. Is an amazing thing.
That was amazing.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah. And the artist was there. It was a woman.
Yes, Rebecca Stevenson. Yeah. So I deliberately want to encourage people who, you know, think they probably don't think they can afford to buy work, but the kind of work that I have for sale at the gallery is really artists who are really connected into the contemporary kind of world, if you like. So these are artists that I hope, and they hope, we want them to be the future Turner Prize winners. So buying a drawing from one of those artists, not only do you get something nice for your walls, but you get something, you're contributing to the development of their career. And in a sense, what I'm very keen to do is to work with potential collectors and hopefully help them if they want to shape a collection or think about, you know, starting a collection. That's what I'm there for. So people usually when they go to London, you know, they're scared to enter some of those commercial galleries and wouldn't know where to start. And so that's one of the boundaries that we're hoping to break down at the gallery, that we're friendly, affable, we're always there, so you can ask us anything and you don't have to be embarrassed to ask.
But the great thing is you are there to sort of help and encourage, aren't you, rather than just saying, well, I'll take your pictures, hang them and take 10% of the cost.
No, it's absolutely, I am there, I'm like a football manager, so I'm there with my artists trying to support them get into the Premier Division, if you like, I'm there to develop their careers and work with them to make the best work that they can possibly make.
And are you, do you have any connections with the art colleges as well?
Yes, I'm actually in contact with quite a few of them, and I'm contributing to developing a new MA in the city with John Moores University, which starts this September. So it's really important, all of the arts in the city, I think. It's amazing in Liverpool that we do work very closely together, because what we want to do is develop an infrastructure where artists can come, they can go to college here for degree and postgraduates, but then they don't have to leave. If they don't want to, the infrastructure is here to support them staying and developing their careers. Or if they want to go away and travel like most artists do these days, that they know there's a base here that actually is really connected to the contemporary scene in a way that means that actually they don't think that they're living in a kind of, you know, in a backwater somewhere. And so all of us are really keen to contribute to that.
You're listening to City Talk 105.9, talking in conversation with my special guest this hour, Kerry Hamm.
One, two, three.
They created music history.
They fashioned a generation.
They were just four lads from Liverpool
who shook the world.
They're all God. I'm not a God or the God. Not the God.
This and every Sunday night at 7. The Beatles. Days in their lives.
So we just get up and go down to the cab and play. It was very casual, you know. We just have our tea and sandwiches.
Join John, Paul, George and Ringo from their school days in Liverpool to world domination.
We all used to sign off every school day, you know, and the two of us would just sort of sit there and write, I love we do, and too bad about sorrows.
With exclusive insight, shocking revelations, and never-before-heard interviews from the famous foursome, their families and friends.
The Beatles are treated like Britain's children. Britain appreciates us least.
The Beatles, days in their lives. This and every Sunday night at 7. Exclusive to City Talk 105.9.
Cold weather can be a real problem for the elderly.
So if your mum and dad or anyone else you know are over 70, we've got good news for them.
In a government-backed scheme, anyone over 70 qualifies for free loft and cavity wall insulation from A&M Insulations.
A&M Insulations can help elderly people keep warm in winter and save a fortune on heating bills.
Find out if someone you know qualifies for free home insulation. Call A&M Insulations now on 0800 678 1144.
And the catch? Well, there isn't one. So call today.
City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool.
Just to know that people stand by what British soldiers do, and that people start realising that we don't want to be there neither. But at the end of the day, we put that uniform on to save our country and save the people of our country, and that's just part of the job.
People getting crushed against the gates, and they're closing the gates, and the police are fighting them with batons and everything, trying to get them back.
Kids getting slight. I just carry kids over barriers and everything to try and keep them safe when the police are just telling us to get back.
Our experience with Heysel, Hillsborough, numerous incidents at sports events, something like this could still be allowed to happen. The lack of planning, the lack of care for the safety of fans.
I am a revolutionary and do believe if there were to be democracy, it should be direct democracy, not representative democracy, and that we shouldn't have a head of state. But I do love the Queen. She said to me, you know what, a fella once broke into my bedroom. If you keep your wits about you, there is a way in. I said, ma'am, I'll be right over.
News on the hour, every hour.
City Talk.
This is The Sullivan Show.
With Dean Sullivan.
On City Talk 105.9. In conversation with Dean. On City Talk 105.9.
It's just coming up to 25 past two. I'm in conversation with my special guest this hour, Kerry Hamm, who has the distinction of opening her very own gallery in the city centre here. Contemporary gallery.
It is.
Yeah. And the show that's on at the moment, how long will that be running for, Kerry?
That's until the 4th of August. Right. And then the next one will open on the 14th of August.
And are you planning on having a monthly turnaround?
Yes, but about 8 shows a year, because we have installation time between each of them. And also we're hoping to go to art fairs all over the world. So,
how long does it take to put a show together like this first one?
Well, that started way back at, just after Christmas, actually, which is really short turnaround. When I was working at FACT and in other museums, you know, sometimes it can take 2 years to put a show together and the logistics and what have you, you know. So actually, that's quite a short turnaround, but obviously a lot of pressure because we had work coming in from Copenhagen and also from Athens.
I'm just interested as well, you know, looking at the space down there, How important is it to have sort of almost a blank canvas in which to hang the work?
Well, one of the reasons that...
Or display the work.
Yeah, exactly. One of the reasons I curated the show, that particular show, was firstly we wanted obviously to do a nice show and introduce artists to Liverpool that hadn't showed here before, which was really important. We wanted to test out some relationships with artists that we will then continue working with, of which half of which we will be doing that. And also we wanted to show off the architecture of the space, because we will be doing lots of solo shows, because that's quite an important part of an artist's career development, if you like, that they get chance to develop new work. And that work then goes and tours and ends up in places like the Tate and what have you.
It's very nicely lit in there, isn't it?
Yes, it's beautiful lighting, actually. Mm. It's very... We were really lucky because, actually, as
No, just paint a picture of it, because there's no windows there, are there, that I remember.
It's got one of those old kind of corrugated, like... tin roofs, like an old warehouse roof, but inserted into that there's kind of clear see-through plastic or perspex, so there's kind of shards of light coming in all the way through, so it's perfect for looking at paintings, actually. And right the way through to the till about 9, actually, the light's quite good, and then we just have quite industrial feel, sort of, you know, strip lighting. But it suits the nature of the building, and despite the fact that it's an industrial building, it's got quite a domestic feel in a way, because it's painted brick, so it's all white, and of course that reflects, and it keeps it very bright. And you're right, we try and keep it as neutral as possible, so that whatever you put in that, instantly you're asking,
focused on that, aren't you? Take us back to, how did you get into art? And you mentioned earlier that, did you train as an artist?
I did, yes. Yeah.
Where did your interest come from? Was it something you'd always done as a child, maybe, drawing?
I think
painting?
So. I was, my dad was a musician, and my mum my mum and dad actually went to university in Liverpool, so I was conceived here.
Oh,
and actually they lived just around the corner.
Where are you from originally?
Well, I was born here, and then kind of tootled off all over the shop, and my parents are from the Midlands, so I only returned to Liverpool 5 years ago.
And were they artists?
Well, they were both quite creative, and actually they had lots of creative friends. Interestingly, the people who have supported me in the gallery development are actually people that went to university with my mum, and so they've known me all my life, and they have an interest, and they collect art. So they've kind of supported me throughout my career in a way, like old style pets. Patrons of the arts, but I think because I was an only child, being surrounded by a lot of my mum and dad's friends, we were always kind of
they were arty.
Yeah, they were arty.
Want of a better word. Yeah,
we used to go to folk festivals, and you know. So, but I think because I used to spend a lot of time drawing and painting, and I was encouraged to do so. So then, in later years, I went and did a foundation, and by that time, I was living in a really old building, which was an old Victorian tile factory. And my mum...
Where was that?
It was in Telford, in a place called Jackfield, which is a village near Ironbridge, which is an old industrial place, but beautiful part of the world. And my mum and her then new partner, and we lived together in this converted tile factory, and there were lots of other craftspeople living and working in the same building.
So you couldn't get away from it, really, could you?
No, it's quite true when you think of it that way. There weren't actually any artists in my family, but I suppose the penchant for kind of the road less travelled, I suppose, was already there.
So where did you study?
Bradford. Yep, I did. Well, I did my foundation in Shrewsbury, which was amazing, really fantastic foundation, great tutors.
What sort of things were you doing?
Well, that was a kind of introduction to everything from life drawing through to painting and jewellery, 3D kind of textiles. And I loved it so much that I decided I wanted to go and carry on doing that. I didn't want to specialise too early because I thought I was too young to do that. So there were only two courses at the time, one in Bradford and one in London. And so I chose Bradford, and thankfully so did lots of my friends from Shrewsbury, because we were all drawn to carrying on working in that way.
And how long was the course up there?
3 years. And
so you lived in Bradford then?
I lived in Bradford, and then I did the obligatory, I went travelling for a few months after I graduated, but I was totally committed to being an artist at that point, and I sold all my degree show, so I was absolutely passionate about it. Well, I don't know now, but I was mainly...
And what sort of stuff were you
doing? I was doing abstract printmaking, but actually it was printmaking and that was more like painting, I guess. Some really quite large scale abstract works.
That's a great mill in Bradford, isn't there? I'm trying to think what it's called. There's a few David Hockneys in there.
Salt's Mill.
Salt's Mill.
Amazing. Yeah. One of the best galleries.
Yes.
Yeah, really beautiful.
Really unusual gallery, isn't it?
Fantastic.
And the history of it as well is fascinating.
Absolutely love it. But the atmosphere and the fact that it's kind of mixed with, you know, you can browse and look at kind of books and...
Oh, I've spent many an hour.
It's gorgeous. So I did my degree and came back because places to have a studios were really cheap in Bradford. So I returned and I set up, ran a studio group for artists, for about 20 artist makers in the city centre.
What were you doing with them then? You were sort of
putting on
helping
shows.
To sell their work, yeah?
At that time, I think, you know, because coming from the left, I suppose, you know, anything to do with money at the time was seen as, you know, it was a dirty word. Mm. And so I don't think we ever thought about selling anything.
How did you live?
Well, quite true. I actually always worked in bars. And also, I did amazingly, which seems like a contradiction now, I did market research. And I think that's one of the reasons, actually, it's really put me in good stead for my career since, because actually if you can convince the director of NatWest Bank to talk to you on the phone for 20 minutes, you can pretty much convince anybody, you know, to give you your time at least to try and convince them, whether it's turning a train station into an art centre, which I had to do in my last job, or whether it's, you know, being involved in the kind of capital of culture kind of debates.
Is it important to have a business head in your line of business?
No, I don't think it is, as long as you recognise what you're good at and what you're not so good at. And I think that's the benefits.
Well, that's the Cerulli principles, isn't it?
Have you
heard of
Cerulli?
You don't do the things that you don't like doing.
Yes.
Get someone else in to do them.
Exactly.
And of course, in any business, you know, you can be very good maybe at marketing it or creating it, but maybe not so good at selling it or whatever.
Absolutely.
Or
not so good at the financial side of it. Yeah. You've always got weaknesses, and I think that I recognise what mine are, but I'm actually very good at talking to people and convincing them that they could do those bits with me, for me. Oh, so, yeah, I think that's part of the business. And I think that actually one of the main thing that I'm very passionate about is the artists that I work with. And I think that as long as you choose people you genuinely think are great, then you're not, you know, you're never telling a fib, you know, when you talk to people, and people pick up on that, you know, they pick up.
How do you recognise someone's potential then? Is it just a gut instinct that you have?
I suppose.
When you
maybe
see their work?
Yeah, I guess it's like, maybe like you with acting, that you know, you probably have a better sense of when somebody's really good at their craft because you've been immersed in that language for years. You know, you can sense, or you even know who they're referring to when they act in a particular way because you've studied and because you know and understand where they're coming from. It's the same with art. So lots of people think, I guess, because, and it's true, everybody can have an idea and an opinion in art. But of course, if you study it every day, and think about it every day, and you're with artists and people who create it every single day, as I have been over 20 years, then of course you notice little things, you know, and you kind of spot whether it's kind of connecting with something that's happening in the news at the moment. You know, there's some political kind of things happening in the work, or maybe there's just this general sense, like I was talking about before, about this return to craft, which just from reading magazines and kind of not just art magazines but general kind of even music magazines, you can see what people are wearing, and so it's kind of picking up on all of those things and seeing whether an artist is, you know, but then occasionally an artist will come up with something that you never in your wildest dreams, you don't know where that came from, and they're usually the ones that are just amazing and, you know, and
exciting. You're listening to City Talk 105.9, the Voice of Liverpool. I'm in conversation with my special guest this hour, Kerry Hand. Kerry, how do you respond? You must come, you may not have done, but maybe you have come across. How would you respond to somebody who would say, look at someone like Tracy Emin's Unmade Bed? and just said, that's a load of rubbish, that's not art, that's rubbish. Anyone could do that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's. I mean, I deal with that every day, and I think, firstly, I'll try and gauge whether that person wants a genuine conversation about it, you know, and mostly they do. Mostly they're quite keen to talk about it. I think it's not for me to change people's opinions, but maybe sometimes to give them another way of looking at it and see if we can find a kind of point of exchange. I think if an artist does something like put a load of, you know, they are usually trying to say something. So instead of just running to the end point and just kind of looking at, you know, what's there, is to try and ask people to actually think about why would they have bothered doing that? You know, why would somebody, like, if they can do anything in the world, why would they have done that? And they've done that because they want to say something. So then you start trying to unpick the things that they might be wanting to say. If somebody's just put a green squiggle on a red background, again, you know, why would they have done that? Of all the colours and all the shapes and all the forms in the world, why would they have done that? And so once you start kind of looking at and thinking about it, because mostly the things that they're referring to and saying, I could have done that, they think about things being done unconsciously. You know, they think they could just throw a load of things on the floor and, you know, that'll be the same. But of course it's not, because an artist is making a conscious decision to do something and they've edited out a million other choices that they could have made in order to say something. So, I mean, I think, you know, Tracy's made some amazing work and I certainly, she's still one of the most talked about artists. And I think that you have to ask yourself why that is, you know, actually, that she's made some much better works than others, but it's very rarely that you could actually write off an artist.
Very autobiographical her work.
Yes, it? Absolutely, and it's more overtly so, because I think you'll find in lots of artists' work you'll find a little piece of them in some shape or form. But yes, yeah, she actively wants to tell you about herself.
You're listening to City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool.
City Talk 105.9.
Developing partnerships, creating opportunities, growing sales. City Talk 105.9 presents an exciting opportunity to advertise your business to a whole new audience.
My name's Paul O'Brien. I'm the manager of Gorstons Court in Egbethvale in Liverpool, which is very sheltered housing for retired people. I decided with the help of my colleagues that it would be really good value for money to advertise by radio, because we'd used the press in the past, which we hadn't felt had been so good. The results were very good. And the future, well, we usually have four campaigns per year looking at encouraging people to come to open days, and we certainly will endeavour to use City Talk for that in the future because of the excellent results we got.
To make sure we're talking about your business, call Gillian Taylor now on 472 6866 and ask how we can help grow your profits. City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool.
Accidents at work can be damaging, distressing and difficult to deal with. The right legal advice is essential. So let Gregory Abrams Davidson take the strain and act on your behalf. Call now on 236 5000. Gregory Abrams Davidson are the essential law firm. 236 5000.
Yesterday, I popped on my trainers, hit the streets and asked a few buff-looking guys why they thought Gymophobics was a gym with a difference.
No idea.
Not sure.
Haven't a clue.
You see, Gymophobics are ladies-only gyms. No weight machines, no treadmills, no pressure. So get fit, lose weight and find out about the Gymophobics 30-minute workout. Call into the Cunard Building, Pierhead, Liverpool, or phone 236 7222. Mention this ad and receive your induction for free. Gymophobics, women-only workouts. No sweat.
At the Tasker's Blue Ticket Summer Sale, you'll receive free appliances with every stylish kitchen in-store, modern or traditional.
If you're a homeowner or rent from a private landlord and receive certain benefits, here's some heartwarming news from Warmer Heating.
Under the government's Warm Front Scheme, you could claim £2,700 towards a new gas or electric heating system from Warmer Heating.
Even if you're not on benefits and you're 60 or over, you may still be entitled to a £300 rebate towards the repair or replacement of your current heating system.
Find out more. Call Warmer Heating free on 0800 377 7755 or visit warmerheating.co.uk.
The voice of Liverpool. City Talk 105.9.
This is The Sullivan Show.
With Dean Sullivan.
On City Talk 105.9.
In conversation with Dean on City Talk 105.9.
Just coming up to 3:20 in conversation with my special guest, Kerry Hand. I've been talking about Kerry's gallery and influences and so on. Do you follow the Turner Prize with interest? I'm sure you do,
I Kerry. Do, yes. This year particularly, because there were two artists, Mark Wallinger and Mike Nelson, who I know and have worked
with
before.
Mark won, didn't
he? He did, yes.
Of course he did, yes.
And, I used to be Deputy Director of Grisdale Arts over in the Lake District, and I worked with Mark on an amazing project that actually, very sadly, hasn't come to fruition, but he proposed to build an ark, as in a Noah's Ark, on an amazing ledge over the Lake District, so it would have looked over the whole of kind of an amazing area.
And what was it going to make it out of?
Well, it was amazing. We had to research what to make, and what's really interesting is that there's so many contradictory tales of what the ark would have been made out of, and we actually had to go and meet lots of kind of structural engineers and people in kind of London, and obviously opened up kind of interesting debates philosophically and kind of with a lot of theologians.
Theologians.
Yes, thank you. who we were talking about, you know, what kind of wood would have been available at the time, and would they have been able to bend it in order to make... Because our imaginary Noah's Ark obviously is like a giant ship, but it was very likely that actually the Noah's Ark would have been a large raft, actually. So we were opening all of these kind of things, and we actually went to planning permission, which in
and
the Lake District...
Why didn't it happen?
Well, because it would have cost an awful lot of money, and actually, sadly, I mean, I left Grisdale and lots of things kind of changed, but I think it's something that Mark still wanted to do. But we were going to build it in situ and work with... Because, obviously, Barrow, like Liverpool, had a big shipping kind of industry, and so we wanted to work with local people and skilled craftspeople to make this on this giant mountain in situ. And you know, we've got a TV program interested, and you know, it was going to be an amazing project, but we had to do a lot of fundraising to make it happen. But one of the things, of course, is the Lake District is a national park, so actually encouraging more visitors through it is always a tenuous thing. So yes, but he's an amazing artist and very deservedly one.
Just remind us what his installation was down there at the...
It was a film work of a live performance that he'd done years before, which was of him dressed as a bear in a museum in Germany. And he was in the gallery kind of on his own late at night, kind of pacing around. And, you know, you can take that in so many different ways, kind of comedic. But obviously also it was, I was actually in London at the time when it was relayed back live from the gallery to another gallery in London. This is going back years. And actually the kind of solitude and the kind of, I don't know, the sort of tragicomic aspect of what he was doing was quite sort of unsettling.
It was almost as if it was a trapped soul.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, couldn't find the way out.
Yes.
Or hemmed in. It was lots of suggestions.
Exactly.
I thought it was very interesting, that one. Is that the sort of thing you might do at your gallery? Sort of a live performance?
Absolutely,
as art?
Yes. I mean, on the opening night, we had the Juno Projects, who have just done built a sculpture at Tate Britain outside, and Bedwy Williams, who represented Wales at the Venice Biennale. And they're all friends and came to do a performance to kind of congratulate me, but also, you know, and I know perhaps, you know, it's interesting, because I think all the young artists and all the kind of arts crowd really love them. You know, they're really, and I'm really passionate about them. But I think, again, it's an acquired taste art. You know, it doesn't matter if you like some things, you don't like them. The next time you might come in and you might see another kind of performance that you think is amazing and blows your head off. But yeah, it went down very well. I've had lots of people emailing me asking me who Bedwy was in particular.
And certainly your tastes change over time, don't they, and develop.
Absolutely.
And I suppose that all comes with experience, doesn't it, Serena?
Absolutely. It's interesting, actually, because I went to the Lady Lever recently, and when I was a teenager, I was obsessed with Pre-Raphaelite work, and I think lots of people were, you know, and also the Gustav Klimt, you can see how popular that's been. And I think as an art student, always go through that phase where you're obsessed with Gustav Klimt and, you know...
Macintosh.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So it's really nice, actually, that that's come here.
But it's interesting, isn't it, because, you know, you know, if you look at somebody like Picasso's work and people go, oh, you know, it doesn't appeal to me or whatever. And yet if you look at the whole history of his career, go back to, you know, before he entered that later movement, he was a wonderful landscape artist,
yes.
wasn't he?
Yeah,
and portrait artist.
Yes.
And you need to go through that as an artist in order for him to find
your own style.
What he ended up with.
Yeah. And I think, to some extent, one of the reasons why opening the gallery here rather than London or anywhere else is really important, because that support for artists from art school through to actually making a show at the Tate is a really big deal. And of course every artist in the world wants to do a show at the Tate, but in order to do that you have to go through those phases. Some artists are lucky to show they're young in their career, but actually it's usually kind of mid-career artists to kind of fully emerged artists that get that show. And in between, that kind of curatorial support or that kind of potential to really test yourself and do something perhaps that, you know, you're a bit nervous about. It's one thing doing it on your own or doing it in a show, a broom cupboard, you know, with your friends, you know, but actually to have the support of somebody who's like saying, no, go on, give it a shot, you know, it's a big deal. And actually that's what I'm there for, really. So it's like having a critical friend on board that I can offer them that space.
You're listening to City Talk 105.9 in conversation with my special guest this hour, Kerry Hand. Now, Kerry, you mentioned earlier about turning a train station into an art gallery. Tell us about that.
Oh, yes. That's when I was when I left FACT, I went to work for Metal, which is a great organisation and actually has an opening tonight over at Edgehill Train Station.
We've had them on. They've been on the show.
Have you? Yeah, fantastic. Yes, yeah. They're about to open a show this evening, and I worked with them for a while on developing the architectural plans to develop Edgehill Train Station.
And where did that idea come from?
That actually, I think Ian Brownbill, who you may have heard him talk about King Cotton, which he was responsible for writing last year, and that's when I was working at Metal and kind of supported Metal in developing a whole range of projects to do with King Cotton. The station, so they were looking at ways in Kensington and kind of that area of Liverpool, looking at spaces that are and have had an amazing history, and obviously Edgehill just has the most phenomenal history, and it's really an inspiring place, and thinking about regenerating them, but in the sense of not just for kind of commercial purposes or turning it into, you know, a boutique hotel, but into a space that belongs back to the community, if you like. So I worked with architect Shed KM and the rail companies around that, and we developed the plans and the architectural designs. We took it to planning permission, got planning permission, and then I supported Metal in putting in a heritage lottery bid. And at the moment, they're just using half of the station. So I also put together some programme for them. So we did a festival at the train station down towards platforms 3 and 4. That was called Truck Stop. And they've kind of run with that idea, and now they're kind of doing a series of events at the pavilion that's been designed there. So I think that's certainly one of the things I'm interested in is contributing to artists and organisations. I've worked with a lot of organisations to kind of help them develop ideas and kickstart big projects, if you like.
I always thought it was a great shame, because I used to travel regularly to London on the London train. I always used to think it was a great shame, because you always used to slow down. The train always slows down, you know, Edgehill. I always used to think, why hasn't anybody ever done anything with that station? It's just there, forlorn, empty. I was just crying out to be used for something.
Yeah, no, it's amazing.
So it's great what's happening down there now.
It is. So, yes, that was just... but I think it was when I was working for Metal that, because a lot of the work, and obviously, you know, kind of around Edge Lane and Kensington area, there's still a lot of work to be done. And I think for me personally, because Metal's a kind of cross-disciplinary organisation, I was really keen. I think if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it in the Capital of Culture year. So so I left Metal in November to go solo. And so actually it's a relatively short turnaround, really, in terms of finding a space, finding some backing.
Was it the right decision? Did you make the right decision?
Yeah. Absolutely. Maybe you should ask me in 6 months. But...
Well, come back in 6 months and tell us, because it's very exciting times ahead, though.
Absolutely, yes. I think you have to, but when big life changes, but also anything, like this is quite a pioneering endeavour, if you like, in terms of moving to that part of town and striking out a little bit. And so you have to have a little bit of fear mixed in there, I think, just to keep your driving force.
Now, you're not just... Kelly, you're not just hanging artists' work, and finding the artists. You're actually acting almost as an agent for
Absolutely.
Artists, aren't you?
Yes.
How does that work?
Well, you have to talk to the artists and get a sense of kind of where they are. And so I guess that football analogy again, you would go and see them play a number of times. So you go and see their exhibitions, look at the work, you assess kind of where they are and where they should be, and with a bit of support where they can get to be. And you approach kind of other galleries,
So would you put their work in other galleries then
yes,
as well?
Yes, yes. So you're looking for opportunities where they can... develop their artwork through showing as much as possible. So that might be in this country or it might be overseas. So you're trying to network and get to know other galleries, and that's public galleries, and find them spaces to show in. But you're also supporting them with their ideas. So your artist might ring up and say, I'm thinking about doing this. And you kind of act as a soundboard, really, and ask them whether, they've thought about X, Y, and Z, and maybe they could try this, or talk to them about things that other artists have done. So you're kind of offering them just somebody to bounce ideas around. It may be that you have to try and help them find some money to make what they need to do, or find them studio space in order to do that.
So you're guiding them, aren't you? Guiding their career.
Yeah. You also, but I suppose in a sense they set where they want to be, and they guide themselves. I'm just kind of there walking alongside them, I guess, and occasionally, and just there, if they need a kind of a bit of a helping hand. But more than anything, lots of artists don't actually like talking about their work. They don't like promoting themselves. They don't like marketing. They don't like that kind of side of the job, if you like. And that's something that I can do. And I like to talk about their work and to talk about what their ideas are and try and communicate those to people. So
I always used to, because I collect quite a bit of art, and the one thing that always, I buy things because I instinctively like them, or they appeal to me, or they touch something, or they draw out some sort of emotion or whatever,
yes.
It's a whole combination of different things. But it always amazes me. I always think, I've got that beautiful painting that I love so much. How could the artist give that away or sell it or whatever?
Oh,
I know. The business side of that is quite interesting, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. It's a really big honour for artists to allow me to sell their work for them. I mean, it's a huge deal, and I would never, ever forget that. And I think, in a sense, that's coming into it later in my career, and also having experienced the public realm and the public sector, if you like, means that I'll never forget that. It's such a big deal. Some artists only make 10 pieces in a year. The fact that they allow me to have them to sell to people is a big deal. And so trust is a massive thing, and you have to earn somebody's trust, of course. So in this first show, the fact that I'm continuing to work with some of those artists is a great thing, because actually it means that they enjoyed working with me, I enjoyed working with them, and we're going to hopefully help their career develop.
How do you gauge what sort of a price to put on a painting or a piece of sculpture?
I know, it's so difficult, because actually the honest answer would be that nothing is ever really what it should be worth. I mean, if you imagine, if an artist might have worked for like a year on something and then they only sell it for 150 quid, it's outrageous. That's... to some extent, it's just kind of having a sense of the whole marketplace, if you like. You can't put a massive price tag on something if it's never going to sell. But one of the you have different priorities, I suppose. Some artists, if they work in film or video, for example, they make 5 copies of a film. So you sell those at a certain price, anywhere from, say, £1,000 to £25,000. But there's not that many artists that can command £25,000 for video film work. So you have to look at kind of what's happening generally in the marketplace and pitch it accordingly.
Can you predict any trends? And as much as can you look at it, can you look at say an artist's work and think, in 5 years' time, that person's going to be, you know, people will be clamouring to get their work.
Yes. Well, I think I've got a few of those in my gallery. And actually, I know that's the case because some of them have just recently been nominated for awards. And
tell us about those.
Well, Nick Crowe and Ian Rawlinson, actually, I commissioned a solo show of their work for Fact before I left, and that happened in November. And actually, November to January, it launched the kind of Capital of Culture Year at Fact. And because we worked together for a year, we decided we wanted to carry on working together. So I now represent them, and they've just been nominated for the Northern Art Prize. Right. And it's great for them because actually they are... Ian Rawlinson was actually was born in Liverpool but lives in Manchester now. And Nick has lived in the Northwest for years but now lives in Berlin. So to be nominated is an amazing thing for them, and they're just at the right... Their work's fantastic and really talks about real contemporary issues, you know, kind of faith and belief systems. And kind of, how we survive some of the bigger issues, but in a really beautiful kind of, and lots of people could respond to their work.
What appeals to you?
What appeals to me?
Yeah, art-wise.
Well, you know...
Because obviously you've got to have your eye on, you must have, I'm sure, I could be wrong here, but do you ever have things in an exhibition that you personally...
Connect with?
Don't connect with is what I'm going to say, but you know that maybe there's
something
a market for it, yeah. Or
is
it always going to be things that you absolutely love?
Yeah, well, I think for me personally, I would find it very hard to show something I really didn't like. But I think there is a case sometimes. If you say we were talking about curating before, which is looking at themes and ideas that people might connect with, sometimes it's important to put in people that you think are doing something really important and moving a certain genre forward, if you like. And you might not connect viscerally with their work. You might not get it in the gut, but you know they're important. So that's one case where you would do that. In my personal instance, in the gallery, in my business, I don't think I'm going to be able to show people that I don't believe in, because I don't, when I talk to people and I have to explain to them why it would be a good idea to buy their work, I really need to mean what I say, and I don't want to spin anybody, you know, those days are over.
Who's going to be the next big artist as far as you're concerned?
Oh gosh.
One name.
Well, I mentioned maybe, Bedwyr Williams, who...